This is the December 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Greg Johnson is here, too, from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, and from Strategic Farm Marketing, online at sfarmmarketing.com. We're joined by Dave Chatterton. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Let's get a list of items that we might need to discuss for the day. We'll start with you, Dave Chatterton. What's on your list?
Yeah, Todd, just real quick, Merry Christmas to all y'all in the studio here and everyone listening out there. I think three big things in the agricultural or the grain markets currently. I think one is obviously China and you know, how much they're going to buy, when they're going to buy, and how the trade agreement will unfold. Two, of course, is going to be South America. And when I say South America, in particular, the weather in Brazil and Argentina and what it means for the potential of what looks like a record crop brewing in that part of the world. And three, I think, is corn demand, really. I mean, it's been, wow is a good word to put to it. It's been very impressive. But holding that pace, I think, may be an issue and something we need to look forward going to. And then finally, maybe the January report is something we ought to talk about. It's coming up here and not too awful long.
Kurt Kimmel, you covered the gamut. Anything else on your list?
Oh, boy, we could go a whole day seminar with that there, Dave. You pretty well covered. Maybe one other factor, maybe outside market activity, consumer confidence, maybe.
And finally, Greg Johnson, anything in the grain markets cash side that we ought to take and pay attention to?
Well, related to what Dave said, not only do we need to monitor Chinese soybean purchases, but there's some rumors late in the week that China might be interested in U.S. corn for the first time in several years. So that's something that it's one of those wild cards, one of those unexpected things that you just never know. But, it's good to keep in mind that something unexpected could happen in this marketplace.
Well, let's start with China to begin with, because there are a whole lot of things that have not been happening, some that have happened. I think they've purchased maybe a bit more than half of the expectation, somewhere around 7 million metric tons. Is that right, Dave Chatterton, of soybeans?
Yeah, Todd, I think that's the current going estimate. Of course, we're still waiting on some of those sales to become public in terms of how they move between COFCO U.S. and COFCO China and finally make it onto the USDA's wire. But it's generally thought that they have gotten to at least a 7 million metric ton or a little bit over the half of that 12 million metric ton commitment. I think, just looking at the price action, the rally that we had after the trade deal was announced in late October and kind of peaking out last month and kind of where we've come back to, really, I think we're on the back side of the announcement. And the 12 million metric tons, keep in mind, that's great. That's demand we didn't have. They were at zero. I think it's a foregone conclusion or it's accepted conclusion that they're going to reach that level. It may not be right away. What they buy may not ship until later next year, certainly. But the question is, then what? And I think if you look at that 12 million metric tons, that's 440 million bushels, give or take. Keep in mind, last year they bought 880 million metric tons. So we still have less than half of what they did a year ago. We have a very big, I guess I'll call it a hole to fill here in terms of how we're going to make up for that additional demand. And certainly record crush is helping to do that. We have some non-Chinese, export destinations that we can talk about. But when it comes to that soybean export line, whether it's the U.S., whether it's Brazil, whether it's Argentina, any other country, it's China. And when China's not buying from the U.S., we have some issues that we need to take account of.
As Dave said, in the recent time, China has purchased in that 880 million bushel amount, around 24 million metric tons. They say they're going to buy 25 in whatever calendar year they're talking about, whether it's U.S. or the Chinese calendar year coming up. Will they be in the marketplace? It seems to me, from my perspective, that is a very big if about next fall, and a zero for some time would be really bad. How soon does the market get concerned about such things in the new crop year, and what are you thinking about it?
Well, near term, they need to stop buying because every time there's a sales announcement, the market goes down. So we're fulfilling those prior commitments. But the big thing is that we need to help in Asia from the private sector right now. So the government replacing stocks. So if we could see some demand pickup, we'll hopefully look into next year and see that fulfill that need for the most part. But we got South America coming online, and they'll be in the market here in another 2 or 3 months. So when you push on out past the spring, it's kind of questionable. But right now, the USDA or WASDE showing a carry out of 290 million bushel. And if we don't see weather concerns in the southern hemisphere, it's going to be awful hard to move back higher.
Greg Johnson, related to the January report and the WASDE, the update that will come from them, starting with the May World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate, USDA is not really backed off on their exports. Either they got it right then and understood how many soybeans China might buy and or what the ancillary cost might be to other places, meaning there would be other purchases, or an adjustment still has to be made at some point.
I'm in the camp that an adjustment still has to be made at some point in time. Keep in mind, we haven't seen the details of this agreement. There's a lot of people that think that this 12 million metric ton purchase this year, 25 million metric ton in subsequent years, has a stipulation that they will buy that only if we are the lowest price, if that's a price competitive, you know, price that we're offering. Otherwise, they do not have to purchase that entire amount. And given what happened the first trade agreement, they did not buy that amount because we were higher priced than Brazil. So I think that's still a big concern is, you know, yes, that's in the agreement, but what other terms are in the agreement? Nobody has seen the agreement, and so we don't know whether they're committed to buy it, you know, price insensitive, or if the price is a factor in how many bushels they in fact do are required to buy.
Okay, so if we're thinking in those terms, Dave Chatterton, how should a producer approach what they have left to sell for the 25-26 crop year?
Yeah, Todd, I think in a general reference, producers have sold more beans than corn. And at this point, I think that's a good thing. As Kurt alluded to, really, if you're talking about, what's going to rally the soybean market from here, it's either China getting more active and more aggressive. And when we look at the signs, and Greg, you know, kind of pointed to this, if you look at the port stocks in China, they're near record highs. If you look at, you know, how U.S. beans compare to South American beans, and after the first of the year, they look very expensive. If you look at, you know, crush margins in China, they're not necessarily great. If you look at, you know, what they're trying to do with their hog herd and shrink those numbers, there's not a big and easy path there that has them buying U.S. soybeans beyond this 12 million metric ton commitment, which, you know, we think they're going to get to. At that point, you know, it's a political, I think, proposition. They're going to buy as many beans from the U.S. as they think they need to in order for Trump to keep the tariff in check on the, you know, billions and billions and billions of dollars of consumer goods that they export to the U.S. And so it's really kind of soybeans are caught as a little bit of a game. And I think in that situation with no weather handle right now to really work with in terms of the South American crop, you have to be very defensive here. And we've seen that action here of late, corn, you know, stabilizing to going higher, beans going lower. And really, I'm afraid that we have some additional downside. So I think you have to be a pretty opportunistic, you know, marketer of soybeans, whether that's old crop or new crop going forward. And we can talk about the acreage mix and some other things in there. But it's a delicate dance. And hopefully, you know, you're going to have to be certainly more aggressive pulling the trigger on soybeans, I think, than corn here.
We've got really on the beans two types of markets or two different scenarios. Here in the east, most of the producers sold beans right across the scale. Elevators, for the most part, about 70-80% of normally what they taken in. As far as the West, they pretty well stored them or found a home for them because the basis was $1, $1.50 under. So this Chinese demand out of the Pacific Northwest needs to materialize here to get those beans moved out of that Northwest area. As far as here, I think you make cash grain sales. You come back in and replace it with some call strategies because basically option volatility is fairly low. You can get a lot of bang for your dollar if we run into some weather conditions here in the Midwest during the growing season.
Greg, of the customer base at TGM in Champaign County, how are they doing on making sales? I know you told us on the air that they did a good job at $11.
Yeah. Kurt and Dave are both right. Soybean sales are much better percentage-wise than corn at this point. It might be in that 50 to 60%. I don't know if they're 70% sold on old crop beans. Maybe some people are in farther east, but I would say in our territory, 50 to 60%, which is pretty good. You know, there were high storage charges in the fall, big carries in the market. Farmers didn't want to pay those storage charges. So if they didn't have their own on-farm storage, a lot of beans got sold across the scale for cash flow purposes. And at that point, there was pretty good export demand for corn. So farmers were tight holders of corn, and they still remain tight holders of corn. So I agree. I think the beans have been very well marketed. And now this dollar sell-off is just a reminder, and we try to remind people, you know, this is why we have offers in. If we thought $11 was good, you know, keep that offer in, because the next time they bounce back up, you have to have offers in. They just don't stay there very long.
Okay, so let's look southward to South America, Brazil and Argentina. Brazil had some difficulties. There were some thoughts that things might turn dry enough that it would be a problem. Clearly not the case, according to all the meteorologists at this point. They've gotten wet. And Eric Snodgrass, others are saying it's not that they're just wet. It's that if they stay wet, that's when they get to have a problem at this point in time. Otherwise, they've got a heck of a crop running.
Yeah, Todd. I mean, you know, the conversation, there were a few dry areas in southern Brazil to get started. Their rainy season started a little bit slow, but it's really accelerated. And now the problem is, are we going to have too much rain when it comes time to start harvesting? And we've got a few combines rolling in, let's say, northern Mato Grosso right now. It's a very small amount, but that will pick up speed here as we go through the last week of December into January. And I would say that, you know, come that first week of February, you could probably say that Mato Grosso is going to harvest somewhere between 800 to 850, 900 million bushels of beans. So they're going to be coming rather quickly, assuming they're not out. But, you know, crop estimates remain high. Keep in mind, they increased their acreage a little over 3% again this year. We don't have the problems in Argentina that we did last year in terms of their weather and their potential production. That probably a little bit more of a corn issue, but when you look at combined Brazil and Argentina together, throw in Uruguay, Paraguay, we're looking on paper anyway, it looks like what will be the fourth year in a row of record soybean production in South America. And that's a direct competitor to the U.S. Obviously, we know that China's preference, you know, has been for those South American beans to this point. So, you know, there are some whisper numbers out there that Brazil could see its first ever 180 million metric ton soybean crop. Now, you know, we're probably a little bit below that. I think agmarket.net and some of the others as well. But certainly the miss here seems to be on the high side for that bean crop at the moment.
Do you suppose we have weather premium built into the marketplace from earlier in the year still? The drop in, I guess, first explain the 60 cent to a dollar drop that we've had in the soybean market and what you think precipitated that. Is it better weather in Brazil? Is it the idea that China may or may not finish out their 12 million metric tons by the time we get to, well, it was supposed to be now, but February? Or combination? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. When we were back in October, we had a breakout and the market went straight up on anticipation of some type of deal being struck. I'm not quite for sure if Asia did not come in as a fund and hedge that purchase and bought it. Now, when they're actually physically buying the product here, they're taking the hedge off, having the market drift lower. But yeah, we've got favorable weather, and the trade pretty well is dialed in that this bean crop in the southern hemisphere is going to be available, and it's going to be $1.20 cheaper.
We need to keep in mind, too, that while we were getting this rally, the government was shut down, so we weren't getting commitment of traders reports from the CFTC. Come to find out, now that we're back up and running, the funds amassed the second largest long position in history in soybeans. And so I think a lot of the paper trade happened ahead of the actual announcements of the sales to China. So the funds were long, and you know, the old rule of thumb is to fade the funds. And when they were as long as they were, obviously in hindsight, that would have been the perfect time to sell beans.
Are they still long?
They are. We've got commitment numbers up through December 2nd. We're still not entirely current, but we're getting closer to the current numbers. And they've sold off quite a bit, but they're still very long. There's still more room for downside if they decide to liquidate the rest of that long position.
Is that a 45Z and renewable diesel thing coming into the tax year that goes into place January 1?
I think it could be to part on that, Todd. I mean, that's certainly part of the equation here. And we look at, you know, crush is still holding in very well, but these bean oil stocks are starting to rise. I think it's a very different situation maybe than the end of 2024, where we knew the tax credits were going to expire and everybody was trying to push through as many as they possibly could. But, you know, the decline, price decline in beans, I think, is just simply, you know, it's money flow and funds. When you look at, to Greg's point, we had them at one point. It looks like they got long about 230,000 contracts of soybeans. 260 would be the record that we have. And now they're starting to bleed that off, but still long, as we estimated today, probably around 150 to 160,000 contracts. You can track the open interest on the CME, you know, soybean contracts and see that it went up a like amount. I think it was around 120,000, you know, net contracts. And so, you know, like I said, when I mentioned we're on the backside of that, I think now they're in that liquidation phase. And unfortunately, they have more to liquidate, assuming we're going to, you know, not find a spark that gets the market going higher.
You did scare me. I was thinking if they're still long, they've got liquidation yet to go, and I don't know what that means for the downside potentially, Kurt. I know you have been thinking about this for a while and have a good idea where the commercials have positioned themselves based on what you're hearing in the marketplace.
Well, the commercials hedged those off when they bought the actual physical, but open interest will go get down next week because we have the January options expiring, and you'll have January futures, puts and calls all matching up, so you have a natural drop in open interest on the beans or any product when the options expire.
On the 45C, Greg Johnson, I know this is a little out of your bailiwick, but during the Farm Assets Conference, Scott Irwin was talking about biofuels on SAF, which could be soybeans, but more likely jet to alcohol or alcohol to jet. For SAF, he's actually bearish at this point, but on just an ethanol plant, 45Z has about 32 cents by his calculation that will be, in his words, helicoptered into ethanol plants starting January 1. One, have you heard about that? And two, will it impact basis or has it already for corn?
Well, number one, that's a proposal. I think the Trump administration is trying to walk a fine line between pleasing big oil and pleasing big ag. You know, obviously big oil does not want to see this. Big ag does. So we don't know how that's going to all shake out at this point. Yes, if everything comes to fruition, that would be friendly corn. But I think this gets kicked down the road for several more months. I don't think that's anything you want to base your marketing strategy on at this point.
Now on corn, what are your thoughts?
Export demand is excellent. Now we have the China rumors that they may be buying or wanting to buy corn off the Pacific Northwest. So even if that's not true, the actual export numbers we've seen have been very good. There's even talk about increasing exports to 3.2 billion bushels, which, you know, would have been unheard of a year ago. So good export demand. Farmers are tight holders of corn. High input costs mean we should plant less corn here. South America is growing corn, but they use a lot of that for their own ethanol production. And the lateness to the bean crop isn't going to hurt the South American bean crop, but it could affect the timing of the corn second crop corn planting, which could turn that corn into pollinating during the dry season. So there's a lot of potentially friendly things out there, and I think that's why people are a little bit more willing to hold on to corn and have sold beans, and thank goodness we did sell as many beans as we did.
When you're talking to customers, Dave Chatterton, what are you telling them about the corn they have left in the bin? Because clearly they do. I also kind of want to hear about what you think grain stocks for corn are going to look like.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, we're concerned holders of corn at the moment. The market has been range-bound here. I mean, call, you know, nearby futures in the March roughly a 235 to a 250 type of a pricing range on the board. And basis has been okay. Depends on the part of the belt that you're in. But we're somewhat optimistic about corn, but I think you have to watch the demand cues to Greg's, you know, idea. You know, we've had, I don't know, I guess an 8-cent move here in the last 2 days on these rumors of China taking some cargoes off the PNW. I hope I'm wrong about this, but boy, I just don't see them taking any sizable amount of U.S. corn. They are sitting on a domestic crop that's a record crop for them, large stocks, cheap prices, hog margins are poor. It may happen, but, you know, and maybe it does. But we're in a situation where U.S. export demand, if you look at the weekly numbers, we're starting to slow the pace down a little bit. We were on fire early, and like I think I used the word wow, you know. And it is starting to slow down, and we're now with the USDA again in that December report raising the export target another 125 million. We're starting to get at a pace where we're balancing exports where their projection is at. So the question becomes, how do we get that higher? And I think that's a very tough ask at this particular point.
Yeah, corn's it's going to be a hot topic. As Greg mentioned, one other thing, ethanol. Ethanol demands crushing for a lot of ethanol. We're using ethanol. Ethanol stocks are lower, so the demand side's real good. As Dave mentioned here, if you look at a chart, we're sideways between 235 and 325 and 350. You go back to that southern hemisphere weather, not this crop, but that second spring corn crop. If we get into a situation where they have a little bit of weather scare and all of a sudden we get optimistic, we poke out that higher end, I think the funds will jump on it. Oftentimes, funds or investors look for undervalued commodities. When you compare corn and beans to gold, silver, and some of these, the Dow or any other investment, grain market's fairly reasonably undervalued.
Can you make a case as well for both corn and soybeans to go higher, or will soybeans act as a drag on the corn market, in your opinion?
I agree with Dave. You know, we've been in this trading range. We're about 15 cents off of the top end of the trading range. I think March corn's at 444, 445, and the high has been 460. So I'm friendly. Can we get to 460? Yes. Should we be selling corn when it gets to 460? Yes. I mean, so yes, I think we're going to wait for the January 12th crop report. Let's hope that they lower the yield, and let's hope they don't lower the feed demand just quite yet. And if they do, we might be able to get a bounce, but this is not the beginning of a bull market. This is an opportunity to get old crop corn and maybe even some new crop corn sold.
That brings me back to the grain stocks report, because we'll know what first quarter usage looks like, or at least what's in the bin. A pretty good accounting from USDA's side. We have had avian influenza. We have the smallest cattle herd on record. Lots of things going across the border, but that's not being fed here. Feed and residual number is going to be an interesting one to keep track of in this case.
Well, the feed and residual, you got to remember, that's a miscellaneous category. That's always a tough one to figure. But when you look at, yes, influenza, but on the cattle, on feed, and they're actually feeding it a heavier weight, so we're feeding a lot of grain. But two, the corn exports, we're moving a lot of corn to Mexico to feed out feeders and fats down in Mexico too. So I think this corn market overall's got some real good support in it. I think it's going to offer some opportunities here to get some catch-up sales after the first year when you need some additional cash dollars to pay some bills.
Yeah, so the grain stocks will give us a feed and residual number, but of course the WASI will have a feed number in it. Greg hopes that it stays the same in January. I don't know. That sounds like it's pretty hopeful to me. But
Merry Christmas. No, I think it is hopeful. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, Todd, smallest on-feed cattle supply since the 1950s. We are, to Kurt's point, taking these cattle, you know, heavier. We're pushing 1,600 pounds. So, you know, maybe we're feeding those cattle an additional, I don't know, 20 bushels of corn if you do the math. But we're also slaughtering 2 to 3 million less cattle per year. So, you know, there's a give and take in that. And if you look at the USDA's demand profile in corn right now, they've got exports up 12% versus last year, feed up 12% versus last year with that animal number that we just spoke of, and they've got ethanol up a more modest 3%. Overall demand's up 7.5-8% year on year, and that's the bar I think that we're trying to get to. And for whatever the USDA may add on to exports, I think they take it away from feed, and that's probably their thesis going forward. So we've got corn as a situation of very good demand, but we also produced a record crop, and we're in balance with that, but it doesn't leave us a room to really rally above that 450 mark, in my opinion.
Given all the adjustments, yield, exports, feed usage, $2 billion still is a carryout, in your opinion?
I think it creeps up eventually towards 2.3 or 2.4. The USDA is expected to cut yield here come January. Now, the biggest non-major drought year, or maybe throw in the flood year of 93, biggest cut that we've seen in that January report for corn yield is about 3%. And if they followed that, we would get to a 180 type of a yield. You take almost 500 million off of the top line of production. Now, I'm not saying that they do that, but that's your historical precedent. If they back off somewhere in the middle of that, we do improve the balance sheet a little bit. But I think over time, we're going to end up, unfortunately, coming up a little bit short in terms of the feed you should side. And I think ethanol is a question mark. Although we're producing a record amount of ethanol, we're using less corn to do that. These guys have gotten more efficient, and effectively the ethanol yield or the conversion rate from corn to ethanol is above 3 gallons a bushel. And, you know, we need this demand to continue. It's like, you know, you just can't let up on the accelerator here. All of a sudden, those stocks start to creep a little bit. So 2.4, you know, don't let that scare you. I think maybe that could happen over time. We'll see what the USDA has to say in January, but the biggest support that we've got right now is that demand is good and the USDA might cut yield, but the opportunity window isn't forever. You have to have a plan and stay disciplined.
Well, ways out, but then ending stocks from both of you?
Yeah, I think we're below 2 billion bushel myself. I think demand's going to offset some other adjustments along with some smaller yield. But the thing is, we can talk bigger or smaller, but to get real bullish corn, you got to have that ending stocks clear down to 1.5, 1.4 to get the trade excited.
I think I'm right in the middle at 2.0, 2.1. We hopefully get the 2.0 or 1.9 number in January, and then if Dave says we go higher eventually month by month, we get up eventually to 2.3, 2.4. Hopefully the farmers have taken advantage of that little price rally that we get when that number comes out below 2 billion bushels. Like I say, you know, the big picture is without a weather problem, we still have an ample supply of corn. We need to sell it at some point in time, so why not sell it at the upper end of the range? I'm not looking for new highs to be made. I want to sell corn at the upper end of this range that we've been in for several months.
Is there anything on the global side for corn, soybeans, or wheat stocks for that matter that you see of concern, or that gives you hope?
Well, I mean, wheat stocks globally among the major exporters are just too large, and we continue to see wheat kind of consolidate around the bottom of its recent trading range. We're heading into a situation, I think, from a farmer perspective or a marketing perspective in 2026, where if you look at the global stocks, you know, especially among the world's exporters, they're going to be heavy wheat, and they're going to be heavy corn, and they look like they could be pretty heavy in soybeans. Now, you know, the global corn picture will depend a lot on what happens with Brazil's safrinha crop, which they haven't even planted yet. So we have a ways to go on that. And, you know, one thing maybe we haven't talked about so far is acreage for next year. And, of course, there's a big expectation that corn acres will come down in the U.S. Bean acres will go up. We'll have a rotation of, you know, from where we were a year ago. But I guess I'm a little cautious on that statement. I think if you look at the margins for a lot of the smaller grains, so if you look at cotton, if you look at rice, if you look at what's happening in the Southeast, the Delta, and the Plains, they don't have very many good choices. So maybe we get a few more corn acres than the trade is thinking, or maybe a better way to say it is the corn acres don't go down quite as much as what the trade has thought about. So
are you above 94 million acres?
I don't think I'm above that number, but I don't think I'm a lot below it.
Numbers from the two of you, what do you think for corn acres?
I think we're in that 94.
And Greg?
I agree. I mean, we were at 98.7. I mean, so 94 is almost a 5 million acre drop, and that's a pretty good shift from year to year.
What do we get for soybean numbers if we have a 94? We have a lot of acres that we could have big soybean numbers still, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could see that thing jump from 81 to 85, 86. And, I mean, my fear is that, you know, we see corn not fall as much as is expected, and beans, of course, take the big jump that's been indicated. And, you know, that's a what if. There's a lot of time to go on that situation. But when, you know, we're on the path, I guess, to get back to where we started of assuming, you know, weather is not horrible, we're going to keep producing these big crops and we're going to keep adding to our stocks.
Let's turn our attention to the final word from each of you. Greg Johnson from TGM Total Grain Marketing right here in Champaign County. Your final word for the day.
I think this sell-off in soybeans is a good reminder to producers to have offers in to take advantage of those times when the market does spike up. Because without a weather problem somewhere in the world, we're growing too much corn and soybeans for the demand. So have your offers offers in at realistic levels. Use the upper end of this trading range for corn and soybeans. We've probably seen our highs unless we have a weather problem. So you're just going to have to lower your sights and get those rest of the beans sold at lower values.
Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net.
Yeah, that's well said, Greg. From a speculative point of view, I'd maybe take a stab on the long side of the beans and put a sell stop underneath this week's low here. The beans have returned to the point of the breakout to the upside from last October. So if you're one that likes to roll the dice and look for an opportunity, I'd maybe take a look at that. Otherwise, have a safe, enjoyable holiday.
And Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, to Kurt's point, I mean, the sell-off that we've had in beans, I think you want to be a little bit, even though I've talked probably as bearish as any of the three of us here today, I think you have to be a little bit cautious about being too bearish here in the near term, just considering how much we've fallen and how oversold we've become, and we're going into a holiday period. Having said that, doesn't mean, you know, fall asleep at the wheel. I think, you know, I always talk to our clients in terms of marketing of being either, you know, offensive or defensive in terms of the prices and the goals that they're looking for. And I think it's still very much a time to be playing defense, particularly with soybeans over corn, but really even in both cases. So
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel, Dave Chatterton, and Greg Johnson. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.